our digital identity is something of value and something that we need to protect. So if we're going to protect our digital identity, protect it with something that is phishing resistant and can stop people getting access to it. And that technology is available today, and it's going to be increasingly available more and more across all of those services that we use over the next, hopefully, 3 to 5 years.
This is GabyCast.
As a primary target for ransomware campaigns,
it's security and testing and performance and scalability.
Risk and compliance.
We can actually automate that.
Take that data and use it.
Joining me today is Jeff Schomburg, Regional Vice President, Asia Pacific in Japan from Yubico. And today we're discussing why having zero trust in online relationships is a good thing. So Jeff, thanks for joining and welcome. So Jeff, I want to begin with your statement about zero trust in online relationships is a good thing. So tell me more about this.
Today covers such a big part of our lives, you know, our work, obviously, but our social media connections and the whole myriad of online services that we access, you know, banks, energy providers, telcos, online shopping, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all of these require some information about us, that is our digital identity. And, you know, with such a large number of online relationships, the risk of a cyber attack therefore increases accordingly. So, you know, as users, we're expecting these providers, either our business or these other service providers, to take steps to protect that digital identity. And, you know, recent high-profile attacks down in this part of the world have shown the value of our digital identity and how easily that can be stolen or compromised. So having something that protects that digital identity is really important. And some research that we've done shows that, you know, even today, still 60% of businesses are using just a username and a password as that primary means of authentication to protect that identity. So we think we need to do something different. And moving to a mindset of zero trust, we think is a good thing. That's because, you know, zero trust means don't trust, you know, trust no one. We shouldn't trust a service provider unless they can adequately be verified before we start sharing some of that information to do whatever it is we need to do. In the business world, zero trust being adopted by large corporates to protect their company data. So we think as a consumer, the same sort of thing should apply. And that's the reason is to protect our security and our digital identity, which gives us peace of mind to be able to do these things far more comfortably. And we think that should start with authentication, you know, verifying that the service provider is genuine and can be trusted before we get going. And, you know, from a Yubico point of view, we think phishing resistant authentication with something, a security key like a YubiKey, is a really good start. So that's why I think, you know, we link zero trust in online relationships. It's all about protecting our digital identity.
Okay, I want to get into digital identity a little bit more because, especially here in Australia, we're obviously moving more towards that, especially with like a driver's license, for example. Ooh. I remember I was in the US last year and I showed my digital driver's license. They're like, no, that's not allowed. You have to have a physical card. So it's kind of weird. Like sometimes the US is like ahead of us in certain things and other things it seems a little bit backwards. But I know that people that I speak to, which is a lot in the industry, but also people more generally, and I'm a curious person, which is probably why I run this show, but people seem to be paranoid by the whole digital identity thing. So do you have any sort of insights on that front around what you're hearing in the market?
I think it comes down to trust, that our digital identity is of value. We give away pieces of information about us, such as our driver's license, our passport numbers, our credit card details, etc. And I think we're paranoid because we're not confident that those providers that we give that information to can keep it secure. I think that's really the essence of why we're worried about this. So we need to be assured that that identity can be protected because it is so valuable.
Okay, let's talk about assurance because you're right. But anyone can sort of get up there and say, and they people do. And to be honest, there absolutely are organizations, large and small, that are probably virtue signaling saying we really care about your identity. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, obviously, you know, breaches are going to occur, etc. But again, it goes back to, well, you're saying that you care, but then there's all these controls that actually weren't even implemented to start off with. So that's a great start to caring. So What are your sort of thoughts then on that? Because anyone can get up there. It's great PR, great media. We care about this. But then, you know, it's not followed up by the right actions.
The rubber's got to hit the road somewhere, doesn't it? To validate the and provide evidence behind those statements. And you say it's pretty easy to say, yeah, we care and our consumers, our customers are number one, et cetera. So we've got to see evidence in the things that we do day to day that give us that confidence that it does match. And I think that comes down to the, you know, the techniques that we use every day. Are we doing more than just a username and a password to authenticate us and protect us in logging?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I'm a very big proponent of rubber hitting the road because I don't like people who virtue signal. It's followed up with action, demonstrating what you're doing. So you mentioned before, we want to see the evidence. So how can a company display evidence? Now, if we focus it maybe on the consumer lens, like people like you and I are in security, it's probably a little bit more apparent about what's happening. But the average person, like they don't really know, like, oh, well, this company seems secure or appears secure. So how would you demonstrate that from your point of view?
Look, I think there's, you know, you can all make the statements about we care, but evidence, and it's hard because we're in the security game and we know what's good practice. So as a consumer, how do you get that confidence? And putting something behind your username and a password is good. And there is a perception that, you know, the one-time codes or the SMS links that are a second factor, that's good. Well, the reality is it's not good enough. So there's still a lot of education that has to be done across the industry to make people aware of what is good practice, what is highly secure. And look, I think that's starting. We'll probably talk about passkeys in a little while, but you know, the fact that Microsoft, Google, and Apple are all putting their weight behind this, and people are starting to get exposed to that terminology and those options, I go, well, okay, that's the sort of thing I should be looking for. So a lot of it's to do with awareness of what is best practice. And if we start to see that in our online transactions as consumers, then we'll start to get that confidence. And you know, maybe it's about infusion as well. And if we're doing things in our business world, and you know, we see a lot of business, particularly government and large corporates, doing the right things when it comes to security hygiene, well, then we'll expect that in our online world as consumers. And if we don't see it, then we'll start to demand it. And I think there's, you know, we can start to feed off business versus consumer to lift the overall awareness and therefore lift the overall profile of security in everything we do.
Yeah, great point. So from my understanding, I don't know what you're seeing, but I think people are starting to demand more from businesses. So I was talking to a guy the other day, actually on the show, he's based in the US, but he was saying, like, I think it's getting harder for businesses. Like the sweeping statement, the virtue signaling isn't enough anymore. Maybe 30 years ago, not anymore. So I think it's going to be harder for businesses to demonstrate, show the evidence, rubber to the road. So are we going to start to see businesses, I don't want to use the word scrambling, but doing a little bit more than perhaps just the baseline of what some of them are currently doing?
Yeah, well, it doesn't have to be hard. You know, it's about change and doing something that's different. And I can see that just the groundswell moving along, that people will start to get exposed to this and expect these services to be provided and these better levels of protection being provided. So, you know, we're starting to see across industries this infusing into the marketplace, and it's becoming available. I look at a lot of things through the lens of, you know, supply and demand. On the supply side, the technology is available. It is out there. So what's stopping it? What's stopping businesses from adopting this? And a lot of times it's simply about change. And some businesses, there's a lot of complex legacy tech debt that's out there, and implementing that change is not as simple as we might like to think it on the surface. So it's all about changing mindsets and changing perceptions, which takes time.
Yeah, so yesterday I was in a face-to-face podcast, and then a group of guys next door working in the next office sort of rolled past, and then they were like, hey, like, what are you guys doing, et cetera. Guy I was with was like, hey, like, my friend KB, she runs a security podcast. He's like, oh, security, like, yeah, like I work in insurance. And he's like, you should see the amount of information we have on people, like literally their whole, you know, their whole life, financial, everything, right? And I was like, oh, like I said, so tell me more about your security. He goes, I feel like I'm getting audited. Not that I was auditing, but it probably appeared that way. And then he's like, oh, yeah, we just like kind of have stuff in a drive. And my face was like, what? What do you mean? What? I said, the word drive and that's it really worries me. And obviously, like, he was like, oh, I'm not the security guy. I don't know what's going on. But what really motivated me is there's probably a lot of these smaller independent players out there that are holding serious PII. I don't think they really know, like, how to find the right security player. Now, this podcast is more industry specific, as you know, as well as all executives and friends. But like these guys that are out there, are holding this information, they were sort of saying to me, like, well, we don't even know where to start. We don't know who to go to. Like, how do we find these security companies out there? And it was just, it really shocked me to be like, we're not doing good enough probably as an industry, because you've got people here that are asking these questions. And then they were saying that because of the Optus breach, et cetera, heightened their sort of alert on, well, we've got all this sensitive information. We need to be very focused on it. And so I guess it comes back to that awareness piece. And I think people are trying, but it's more so how do we penetrate more on, yes, the consumer side, but then also these smaller independent businesses that they just don't know how to navigate the space because it is complex and it's overwhelming. And how do you know who's good and who's not good? Like, there's a lot going on.
That's true. And yeah, it's awareness. And I think, yeah, organizations like the ACSC, the Australian Cybersecurity Centre, does a great job of getting information out there and, you know, at all levels. So based down at the consumer level, we're aware of the significance of protecting our data as a result of, you know, the high profile breaches that we've all seen recently. But also, you know, up at the top end, the director and company boards, the risk of a cyber breach is getting to their level of attention as it should. So we're kind of seeing a bit of a, you know, top down and a bottom up. So I think it'll happen, that awareness. But there's a lot of people to educate and it takes its time, unfortunately. But I can see momentum really building.
Yeah, absolutely. It does take time. I think it's the right type of education because, like, you know, it's how we're communicating to these different audiences. I think that's something people need to sharpen. It's probably why I got into what I'm doing. I saw a massive gap. People, it depends on which discourse you need to speak to them into, you need to fundamentally change, whether it's podcast, video, how the videos produced, how are they deployed, are they shorter videos, like all these types of things. I don't think the industry has done it really well over time. And I think they should be paying more attention on that comms piece in order to close that gap. So I want to go back now on the consumer side of things. Now, I'm a practitioner, historically moved into this space in terms of media space, but I'm going to put my consumer lens and glasses on because obviously I'm still a consumer. So I can, you know, I want to view this conversation through that lens. Because I think it's very easy for security practitioners to get bogged down into the nuts and bolts and the weeds, and we're going to make something so secure that it's not very, you know, it's not user-friendly. So would you say from your experience that business relationships, you know, via online accounts, people are getting frustrated because, again, I understand the security side of things, but then, you know, the usability just isn't there, or it's, there's so many things you've got to navigate through and then people get frustrated. What are you sort of seeing?
Yeah, and the consumer lens is a really good lens because we're all consumers. And, you know, from personal experience, the conversations I have with friends and family, the conversations in the industry research, I think it's fair to say that we're all pretty frustrated with the complexity of our online relationships. You know, the fact that we've got so many different online accounts and each of those different service providers has got a different way to let us access those services. So there's really no standardized approach. And I think that leads to frustration. And the frustration in two parts, as you say, the convenience side of it, of having to access this information in such different ways and prove our identity and log into these services in a different way, can be frustrating. And, you know, the old username and password thing, you go to log in and what's my username? Is it my email address? Is it a number? What is it? And then we'll get to the frustration around passwords. And 8 characters, 6 characters, capital letters, special characters, and you just when you get it right, they ask you to change it again. It's like, I'm frustrated with that. So the convenience side of the complexity of those relationships is really frustrating. And then as you say, we're in the security industry, we're security practitioners, and we know that username and password is not secure. We know that some other second factor methods that we use today, such as emails and SMS and even one-time passwords, they're not as secure as other methods that are, phishing resistant. So we know there's a better way. We know that it should be there, but it's not. And I think that also brings a level of frustration, as we're talking before, that consumers, we're becoming more aware that we need to do something better. We're being told by the giants, the techs of Microsoft and Apple and Google, that there are better solutions out there. And so it's pretty frustrating for us as consumers when we're not getting that. We're not being given the best level of security that's available today. So, that frustration is definitely out there.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think that you're so right. I think now it's got so many accounts of so many different things. Look, people can think what they want about password managers, each their own opinion. I believe, though, that people are starting to ask more of those harder questions because of everything that's happening recently, especially in Australia. So I'm just curious then to know, and I mean, look, my mind's just going a million miles an hour right now, so I'm just going to try to make sure I don't go on a random tangent. But let's go back to username and password. So obviously that frustrates people, consumers, people like ourselves even. But then there's people saying, we're going password this, we don't believe in passwords, da, 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 da. But then like, where is it? Like I've been having this conversation, I've done 200 plus episodes talking about password this for a while, but I can't think of any account at the moment that technically is password this other than maybe logging into my iPhone.
Well, if you've got an Office 365 account, your Microsoft Office or your Gmail, those services have a passwordless experience available to them. You talk about your iPhone and biometrics. That's a great way of getting you into the device, but you still need to authenticate into the services that you're using on those devices. So that we're starting to see more services being exposed, and it's Apple really only in, was it January or February this year, announced their support for security keys, which is a passwordless experience to protect your Apple ID. It's the announcement last year in, was it October, where the three tech giants, Microsoft, Apple and Google, all announced their support for passkeys or passwordless. So that's relatively recent in the whole chronology of all of this. So it does take time, but we're starting to see expose that to us to make it a better way. And we're not going to get rid of the password overnight, but gradually exposing us to these alternatives. And if you're logging into your Microsoft account, for example, it'll still ask you to log in, give me your username or your email address. But now they're putting below that sign in options or sign in with a security key. So they're exposing that to us rather than just taking it away completely. I think that'd freak a lot of people out. So gradually changing our mindset to there is a better way and making that available to us, I can see that we will get away from it. But as you say, we're still going to have passwords here and there and password managers required, but there is a better way and it's starting to seep into our everyday world.
So I've spoken to people. I said, look, do you ever think that username and passwords will ever fully go away? And their answer was no, and it's going to depend. And I know every answer depends, but what are your thoughts then on that? Do you think we'll get to a stage in 20 years, this is abolished?
Hopefully it'll be sooner than that. But I mean, that's what we're aiming for. And as I said, with the announcement that through the FIDO Alliance partners and Fast Identity Online, led by Google, Apple, and Microsoft, and they control, 90% or more of the platforms and systems that we use today, operating systems and so on. So if they're behind it, there's a real momentum starting to build. As users, and Microsoft have done a great job of passwordless, a great term, and it captures the imagination because people, passwordless, no passwords? Yeah, I'd love that. So there's the supply and back to supply and demand, the supply side's kind of getting it better. And as the demand side, as the users and consumers, we're craving for something like this. So I can see it happening. I think momentum is building, and you know, our job is to accelerate that as much as possible. And yeah, there'll always be a long tail, and you know, we're still using FM radio and instead of downloading stuff over the internet. So some of these technologies will hang around, but hoping that you know the old 80-20 rule, that we get to the majority of these services being able to provide us with a passwordless and secure method of protecting our digital identity sooner rather than later.
So how much sooner would you envision? Because I guess, okay, 20 years, I know there's a bit of a stretch, it's just sort of painting the picture, but 5 years, do you think?
No, look, I'm an optimist and I'm in the industry and, you know, that's what I want to see. But, you know, change takes time. It's hard to put a time frame on it, but I would like to think, given what we've seen in the last 12 months, that we've started that process and, you know, hopefully we're well down that track within the next 2 to 3 years. And, you know, the businesses that we're dealing with in our day-to-day world at Yubico, they're all moving that way. And I've seen the high-profile breaches about 12 months ago. The level of inquiries have gone up. The realization that as businesses, they have to do something more and allocate some budget to do that, because the consequences are horrendous if they get it wrong. There's momentum in the business world to provide better, more secure phishing-resistant services. So, yeah, I'm optimistic, and therefore, if I'm optimistic that something's going to happen in the next 2 to 3 years, then probably it's, you know, 3 to 5 years before we really see mainstream adoption.
What frustrates you the most about a password, a username and a password, from a consumer point of view?
I think I said it before, is that my username, and we've got all these services and whatever it is, 60, 100 services that we log into, and they're all different. Well, what is my username? Have I created some special name for myself? Is it just my email? Have I got a number somewhere? I don't know. I don't have time to go back and think about that. And if I get that right, then the password conundrum is even worse. And so you get it right, and we've all got different passwords, so we try and use the same one because it's easy and convenient, but we know that it's not secure, so we try and change it. And then once we get it right, you go to log in again to go and buy your movie tickets or go and whatever you do, online shopping, et cetera, and they've asked you to change it again. That's what's frustrating. That's what agitates us and drives us up the wall. So there has to be a better way, and yeah, you know, we know that there is, but it's just about getting there.
So people in the industry would say password managers. What are your thoughts on that? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, we do. Obviously, you know, passwordless is the great way forward, and that's what we're all striving for. But as we said before, we're not going to get rid of passwords overnight. And at our philosophy is very much password managers are a good thing. You should use them. And if you're going to use them, protect them with something super strong that's phishing resistant, like a YubiKey. So we support the idea of a password manager. We're not going to get rid of them overnight. So use them to protect your passwords where you have to use them, but protect them with something strong that's phishing resistant.
Yeah. There's a great point. What about there are certain companies that are password management organizations that have been breached? What are your thoughts then on that? Because that rattled me a little bit. So it's like we're talking about having like storing all these passwords and then they get breached. I don't know. I mean, you're obviously more of the expert in this space than me, so I'm just curious to hear your thoughts.
Oh, look, there's no such thing as completely risk-free. So it just means that we've got to be hyper-vigilant about protecting the services that we offer. And if we're offering a password manager, as I say, you make sure that it can be protected with the best and most secure services that are out there today. And that's the FIDO protocols that make phishing resistant, make it easy, harder for people to break in. So we're starting to see that with password manager companies, you know, implementing this FIDO protocol to protect the users from their password managers.
So let's talk more about multi-factor authentication, or MFA. We spoke before about people being frustrated even knowing your username, knowing what your password is, having to reset it. Maybe there's two factors, then you get multi-factors. What are your thoughts on that? So people are already frustrated at what even is my username, and now we're adding more layers, more complexity, you know, more time to log in, etc. So obviously, again, going back to my earlier point on, I get the security side of it, but sometimes some of these things are just not practical for people. And, it, you know, we want to be able to reduce the friction. But, you know, security people sometimes, you know, over-engineer things. I'm just curious to hear your point of view on how do we get an equilibrium on making something secure, but also ensuring that we're maintaining, you know, usability and quick access. Because at the end of the day, people want things faster. If they can't log into your e-commerce platform quick enough, they're going to go elsewhere.
Absolutely. And I think, as I said before, there's no consistent approach today. And so a standardized approach would be ideal. And I think that's what, again, drove the industry to come together and develop that standard, which is the FIDO standard, or Fast Identity Online, or Passkeys, as we now refer to them. So, and that was designed by some of the smartest security guys in the world to be exactly that, an open standard, something that is highest level of security, easy to use, and something that can be deployed at scale. So, you know, that's what was designed from the outset. And all the technologies and techniques that we use today have not been designed from the ground up to be secure. You know, we love using the mobile phone because it's convenient, but mobile phones were actually invented to, you know, make telephone calls, not as a security device. So the security industry has come together to try and solve this problem of taking away the complexity of passwords and managing our logins to make it easy and secure and deployable at scale. So I think if we can get that standard, and the industry has done the work there, if we can get that out there so that that user experience is consistent, so that it can be, as you say, that can be done in the blink of an eye rather than, you know, minutes to log in, so easy to log in, but do it securely, then people will start to feel a lot more at ease that friction's gone away.
Do you ever think as well, with people, maybe customers you're speaking to, let's use like an e-commerce company, for example, just say there's no MFA, it's very easy to log in, it's a frictionless process. Wouldn't that e-commerce business drive more revenue? Because again, people can log in really quickly. Because then I think, well, if it takes me 5 minutes to log in, couldn't be bothered, I'll come back to it later. I will, you know, got distracted through, I don't know, Instagram or something like that, and now my mind's gone off it, or I'll just go to another competitor. So do you think businesses at the executive level or CFOs are thinking along those lines of, okay, yeah, we've got to make, you know, allocate the budget, we've got to make a bit of investment, it's going to be a bit of turmoil, but we may end up having better revenue in the end because there's not such a, you know, big rigmarole process to be, you know, logging on and authenticating to our platforms for actually people to spend money with us. Do you think people think along those lines?
I think it's fair to say that, you know, attention span is important. And if it takes you too long to log in, that impulse, as you say, we're easily distracted these days. So to be able for the online retailer to be able to capitalize on that buying decision, they need to make it easy for you to get in and conduct that transaction. And you know, the first hurdle is getting in, logging in. And you said, yeah, a username and a password. Why would you use a username and a password when you can use something like a security key that you just insert and enter your PIN and then you're in? So, you know, research has shown that that's at least four times faster than the username, password, and something else. So I think, yes, I agree with you that businesses are thinking that of how can we reduce that friction? How can we get to our consumer and make it easy for them to do what they want to do, whether that's, you know, buy a new pair of shoes or whether it's to pay a bill. So making it easy and starting with that front door, if you like, that first touch point, which is logging in, if we can make that super easy, then that's the sort of benefit that will derive from those businesses to be able to do more transactions with their customers, be it online retailing or whatever it is. So yeah, start with that initial exposure, that first experience of logging in.
Well, I ask that because, again, this podcast is not just about CISOs and security leaders. It's about all executives, CFOs and stuff like that. So sometimes in my experience of, you know, writing reports and comms, security people, even if they're working for a vendor or whatever, they go down the wrong rabbit hole. And so the CFO is like, well, I don't really care about that. Oh, but if you can generate, you know, more top line revenue, I'm quite happy to hear your story a little bit more. I'm trying to go down that route. And I think sometimes people may get lost on the right messaging that they need to convey in order to sell their product or their service. Look, I get that. But I think it's about, well, CFO is really going to care about generating more revenue. So if we can position it in a way where it's like, hey, by doing this, you get that. I mean, obviously there's a little bit more wording in it, but you know where I'm going with the story. I think that's what's also going to drive the needle forward more than, you know, because at the end of the day, a CFO, yes, okay, he cares about security, but he doesn't care about all the ones and the zeros and all the technicalities of things. And sometimes I think that's where things get lost. That's why things don't move forward at the rate we would like to see them.
As business leaders, we've got to not just get excited about the technology, which is easy enough to do. We've got to think about the business value of what we're doing. And that's either to, you know, reduce cost or increase the revenue of the business. And if we can do that, and if we can prove that the technology is actually helping us to do that, then I think we'll start to get the attention of, as you say, the CEOs and the CFOs of the world. But there's a business benefit behind doing this, not just, oh, the security guy says it's a good idea because he says it's a good idea. So focusing on what is that business, how does this drive revenue? How does this increase productivity? How does this reduce cost? They're the sorts of areas that, as a tech industry, we need to be focusing on more and more, not just, hey, it's really cool tech because it does something or other.
Would you say more people are definitely taking that narrative versus the former, like the latter approach? Like, it's great tech and the security guys say we should do it because we should do it, rather than, hey, you know, you can generate more revenue. I'm not saying all people. I'm just trying to get a barometer.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I think more and more we're not being, you know, technology for the sake of technology is not going to cut it for the majority of people. As I said before, at the executive level and at the board level, people are seeing cybersecurity as an important topic. So at that level, they're not going to be talking about ones and zeros. They're going to be talking about, why are we doing this? What's the risk that the business is exposed to if we don't do anything? How do we reduce that risk? What's the benefit that comes from that? Is it a financial benefit in terms of top line, such as the e-com example we talked about? Is it increased productivity because people are spending less time? That friction has gone. So people inside the business are more productive. They're doing things better and faster. Have we been able to strip cost out of the business? All of this legacy and tech debt that we're dealing with, if we can strip that away, we can take cost out of the business. So, you know, there's many ways that a business mind or an exec will look at the problem, and the benefits can come in one of or more of those different ways. And because those conversations are starting to happen now at the exec level, at the board level, I'm, again, optimistic that more and more we'll start to focus on those outcomes rather than, hey, this is really cool tech.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. So I don't expect you to have the answers to this, but I'm just curious to know, do you have any sort of like indicators or stats that you used before around the friction? Is this, so hypothetically, 100%, and I am not a maths person, so I'm never going to try to do the numbers, but just so hypothetically, 100 people in your company, takes them approximately 5 minutes to log in through some system, add that all up in terms of all the people, 5 minutes, and then salaries, how much money they're losing just on the 5 minutes of the friction, the frustration, resetting my password, calling up the help desk. I mean, that's just one element to it. So, like, has anyone, or do you know, or do you yourself, like, you know, with what you're doing within your company, have any sort of stats on that? Because even that's interesting. Even that 5 minutes, that adds up.
Certainly at Yubico, we have done that, and we've got some really good case studies around quantifying the business benefits and working with others in the industry. We're all trying to gather the information that we can to prove that point. And, you know, one of the examples that we have is that using this passwordless or passkey approach can reduce the number of support calls to the help desk by 92%. That's a massive reduction because you're not getting locked out of your accounts. You're not asking for your password to be reset. So there's an immediate productivity gain there. If you can do the maths on the number of people in your organization and your IT support area, And if you can reduce that workload by 90%, you're going to, you know, sack those people? No, but you're going to get them to do more important things, which will drive a better outcome. So there's a productivity benefit there. There are other, you know, direct costs. If you take away some of this tech debt and simplify things, there's a cost benefit there. And we look at return on investment. And at Yubico, we did a study recently on the total economic impact of modern authentication or strong authentication. And it touches on all those things. As I said before, it's a cost saving, it's a productivity improvement, or it's a return to the bottom line in terms of profitability. And wrap all that up as a return on investment. What is the return on investment from doing something here? As simple as, you know, if you do the right thing and you need cyber insurance and you can be proving to the cyber insurers that you're taking all the right steps to be secure, there's an immediate cost reduction in your cyber insurance premium as well. So return on investment is really the way we need to think about security, because otherwise it's just, you know, again, you look to the CFO and go, oh, yeah, I have to spend more money on security. When does it stop? Well, if you can prove that there's a return to that investment, then that argument goes away. It's okay, I get the benefit here. I see the logic behind what you're doing. Let's do it.
Have you, just from your experience with your, obviously, your role and everything, have you seen that conversation is what, you know, getting people to listen more? It's like, okay, well, that it makes logical sense in a way in which a CFO who's a numbers person would look at things very, you know, analytically and very numbers driven.
Yeah, they're the conversations that we're having more and more. A lot of what we do in the Yubico world is dealing with the security teams. But, you know, what I'm doing and the role I play is starting to build that business case, to build that return on investment, to have those discussions with the exec level and the board level, to make it clear that this is a good business decision.
So, Jeff, is there any sort of closing comments or final thoughts you'd like to leave our audience with today?
Yeah, it's been a great conversation, and we've explored a whole range of different areas. But probably the two things that stick out to me is that as business users and consumers, our digital identity is something of value and something that we need to protect. Second thing, you know, the tech industry has developed something from the ground up that is highly secure and easy to use. And that's, you know, phishing resistant authentication. So if we're going to protect our digital identity, protect it with something that is phishing resistant and can stop people getting access to it. And that technology, passkeys or passwordless, is available today, and it's going to be increasingly available more and more across all of those services that we use, you know, over the next, hopefully, 3 to 5 years.
This is KBCast, the voice of cyber.
Thanks for tuning in. For more industry-leading news and thought-provoking articles, visit kbi.media to get access today.
This episode is brought to you by Merksec, your smarter route to security talent. Merksec's executive search has helped enterprise organizations find the right people from around the world since 2012. Their on-demand talent acquisition team helps startups and mid-sized businesses scale faster and more efficiently. Find out more at merksec.com today.